Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 134 of D&D Discussions, the podcast for players and DMs alike, where we cover a wide variety of topics to help you with your games. I'm your host, Ryan Reeder, and with me, as always, is my good buddy, Ben Bumhumper. How are you doing tonight, Ben?
I am doing pretty darn good. I am on a little bit of a high of a pretty good session, so let's jump in and get to talking some D&D here.
Awesome. Well, we've got a listener question that we're going to cover here in a little bit that I'm excited about. But first, we wanted to dive a little bit into the news. The first big one being that, like clockwork, basically as soon as we released our last episode, they released a brand new Unearthed Arcana 2025 horror subclasses. And it never fails to have new content released literally right after we put an episode out. So we did get the chance to look over it, and we're not going to go in depth or anything. We'll have the link to the new Unearthed Arcana in the show notes. It's about 9 pages long. But there are 8 subclasses. 6 of them are current subclasses revised, and then 2 of them are brand new. So we have the Bard, the College of Spirits Bard. We have the Grave Domain Cleric. We have the Phantom Rogue, the Shadow Sorcery Sorcerer, and the Hexblade Patron and Undead Patron for the Warlock, as well as the 2 brand new ones, which we'll talk a little bit more about, the Artificer Reanimator and the Hollow Warden Ranger. So, yeah. Ben, What is this Artificer Reanimator thing?
Well, first of all, I just want to say that when I saw the play or the UA and the horror subclass and stuff, I thought all of them were new because I apparently don't pay that much attention to every single subclass of every single class. So when I was watching the video and all of a sudden I'm like, oh yeah, this is a change from the previous College of Spirits. I'm like, what? I'm like, I could have been like a medium bard before. Yeah, so things have changed.
It turns out they released a lot in the last 10 years, and it's hard to remember which one is which, yeah, because we haven't gotten anywhere close to playing all the subclasses. Heck, I mean, I haven't hardly played. I think I've played one of everything, if only even like a one shot type thing. I think I've finally covered all the classes.
Yeah, I don't think I have. I think I'm still missing one or two classes, but yeah, we'll get there. Or I'll get there eventually. But so the you know, Artificer hasn't even come out yet, but they're already throwing in a new subclass for it. So the Reanimator. So this isn't about, you know, drawing pictures and having them come to life or anything, which would actually be a really interesting subclass on its own for something. But no, this is basically, if you want to be Dr. Frankenstein, this is the subclass for you. So instead of being
straight up Frankenstein,
yeah, instead of being an artificer who makes, like, you know, mechanical items and robots and stuff, you fleshcraft, you create monstrosities and stuff. Like, literally at level 3, you get a reanimated companion. And it's just kind of crazy because I mean, You take a dead body, you bring it back to life, and you do cool stuff with it. It jumps into fighting with you and stuff. It can absorb lightning. It blows up if you want it to, which is great. But then as you level up through the subclass, you can like start making modifications to it and everything, which just is so gross and wrong and like perfect for that sort of horror fantasy for someone who really wants to get in there and you know, mess around with bodies as a character, I guess.
Like you said, it's very Frankenstein. And I mean, you get it in like the spells that are specific to the artificer, you know, the false life, spare the dying, Witch Bolt, Animate Dead, Lightning Bolt, Blight, Death Ward, Anti-Life Shell, Raise Dead. Like they're throwing all, this is very necromancer.
Mm-hmm.
Without, yeah, actually fully giving you a necromancer class.
And you get some flavor in your casting too. Like specifically Spare the Dying. You can basically send a jolt of electricity through your target to revive it. But then 10 feet around it, like enemies need to take a dexterity save. Otherwise they take a little bit of lightning damage from it, which I think is pretty awesome.
Yeah. So it actually turns a cantrip, which is just, you know, it keeps you stable into a, you actually are revived, which is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's neat. It's a, that little tiny bolt of lightning that it hits Frankenstein's monster to raise him back. It's fun.
Yeah, like, and the cool thing, like you said about the companions, you can just swap stuff out. Mm-hmm. Like apparently they talked about it a little bit in the video that we'll have in the show notes as well. But yeah, it's like swapping parts out to do different things. It's a very interesting, very fun fantasy for sure.
Yeah, it's there if that's kind of what you're looking for, really.
And go ahead.
I was just gonna move on to the other new one that I think is,
yeah,
Hollow Warden, way cooler.
This is such a neat concept.
It really is. Like, I was surprised that they kind of haven't done anything like this before, because you think that this would fall under like some sort of, like Fey following or Path of the Feywild or whatever, or something like that. But yeah, this is basically, again, more horror themed, and it's taking the idea that your ranger is kind of like drawing on those like horror foresty, cryptid kind of things.
It's like horror folk tales, yeah. type subclass.
Exactly. And like when you use a new feature called Wrath of the Wild, you get like this ancient armor, you have an aura about you, you can kind of have shadows. It's like basically you get a form of dread as a ranger, which is pretty cool. Like one of the examples they have is like you get bloody antlers when you take on this form. And that immediately made me think of the Krampus movie, how when it finally shows Krampus, it's just this horrifying, kind of humanoid creature looking thing. And then I thought about, kind of flavoring it to different types of wilds, just the wilderness and everything. And, the idea of like Swamp Thing kind of came up, being just covered in like, mm-hmm, kind of vines and being all drippy and kind of gross and stuff. And like that feature alone is kind of cool. And like as a DM, I would probably give them like, bonus to, stealth of some sort if they're like kind of, really turning into that. Because one of the big things about those cryptids is you don't see them because, they're so great at stealth. Not because they don't exist. They're just super great at stealth. So, I would add that into it. Who knows? Maybe they might do something like that. Don't know. But the idea of kind of like, taking on the more, ancient, not exactly evils, but like ancient, defenders of the wilderness, of the forests, of the land and everything, and using that as your subclass is very interesting to me.
Yeah, this part of the video was the one I actually paid the most attention to, because I thought it was the most interesting of all of them in a lot of ways. Like you said, that eldritch, it's a little more of that eldritchy type horror. Or that, thing in the woods, or that type of thing that we just haven't seen really a lot of, mm-hmm, in D&D yet. And so I think it's a very neat, inspired subclass that could fit well in those more horror themed campaigns for sure.
Oh, yeah. And if you want to add that like kind of horror element to it, I think the level 15 feature is the perfect epitome of kind of, the theme that they're going for here, which is it's ancient endurance. So as long as you have your, Wrath of the Wild kind of going and transformed, if you hit or fall to zero hit points, but you don't like outright die, like with disintegration or what is it like negative, your hit point total is like an instant death. Mm-hmm. You can use a level 4 or higher spell slot to just have hit points then, which I think is pretty amazing. So all of a sudden it's like, oh, you're going to die. Nope. Get right back up and keep charging after your prey. I mean, that is such a really creepy horror hunty kind of thing. I, yeah, this is, it's a really neat kind of subclass. I normally don't go into like horror kind of stuff or anything, but this one's kind of calling to me as something that could be really interesting and fun to play with.
Yeah, I'm in my personal life, I'm not like a fan of horror movies.
Oh yeah.
Like I just, that's not my thing. But I feel, but the few times I've done it, I can play the crap out of a horror campaign and be super creepy. It's very different things, right? It's, mm-hmm. it's the same genre, and done in very different ways. So, yeah, I think some of these could be a lot of fun. And if you want to take a look at like the nitty gritty details, well, like I said, we'll have the link in the show notes as well that mm-hmm. you can check out and then go, submit the feedback form for it, if you so choose.
Yeah, definitely.
Also speaking of Artificer, the official supplement for the new 2024 Artificer was just announced recently as well. It is being called Eberron Forge of the Artificer. Ha ha. Very, very straight and to the point.
Yep.
It is a brand new 112 page supplement with five subclasses for the Artificer, four reimagined and one brand new, which is the Cartographer, which was in Unearthed Arcana not too long ago. Five revised species, 17 backgrounds, and 28 feats. There are new spells, new things for bastions, which is interesting as well. Magical innovations, sorry, that turn every choice into a creation, three campaign frameworks to channel Eberron's wild genres, noir. I think I keep thinking of the spider noir stuff that Nick Cage is doing with Amazon. They're doing like a live action show for that, and you might know about that from Into the Spider-Verse.
Yeah, I'm good with that. The comics are good.
Yeah, so that's, anytime I say noir now, that's what my mind goes to. Sky High Pulp and Political Peril, 20 plus new monsters each tailored to haunt, thrill, or awe in the genre you are forging. So very exciting. This is what a lot of people have been waiting for, the update to the Artificer class. It'll be great to see those subclasses get updated as well as the brand new one. And then apparently, you know, coming at some point in the future, we may have this sixth one, this Reanimator, coming as well. But Ben, I think the most interesting part about this is the fact that it is actually only $30.
Yeah. It's like basically, hey, here, have this class. Enjoy.
Yeah. And you can actually, on D&D Beyond, you can actually pick up the, or whatever, the ultimate bundle, which is the physical and digital, for $40.
Yep.
Yep. So,
and it comes with some digital dice on D&D Beyond.
Yes, because who doesn't need more digital dice? exactly. But I actually really like this in a world where costs are kind of going up and everything. Honestly, I like the idea of, you know, slightly smaller supplements and not being the whole $50 book.
Yeah. And it's funny because, you know, back when I was, you know, reading the I can't remember the name of the book, but basically the history of D&D, that's kind of something that happened, you know, near the you know, first edition era and stuff, how they would have their, you know, main book and everything, but then they would also sell like small supplements to kind of add little bits here and there. And I like the idea of, you know, the Artificer being updated, definitely going towards the, you know, 5.5 edition that we have. But with the price being kind of low, but still getting a lot of bang for your buck for this, it's a pretty good deal. I'm very, very surprised. Especially if you pre-order the bundle together, having just the hardcover and then also the digital version is, you know, about the same price as you get for just like, gosh, not even a full hardcover of, you know, a different supplement sometimes. So it's a good deal.
We were having, there's a really big discussion in our Discord last week, kind of about campaign length, right? And it was really interesting just kind of hearing the different opinions on campaign length and stuff. But one of the things that brought to mind, and I think we had talked about it at one point, some episode further back, there was the Matt Colville video where he talks about campaign lengths. And yeah, he actually talks about like first, second edition or something like that, where he was holding up the little supplements and he's like, this was a campaign. And it's like 16 pages or 24 pages or 32 pages, right? It's like, these are the things that people used to run. Like, obviously, these, you know, large epic scale campaigns will always be a thing. And they will always, I think they will always be romanticized or fantasized, right? But the sad truth is, time and scheduling are hard. And so a lot of times it is far more manageable to plan something out that is going to be a few sessions or a few months or something like that than it is to span to plan out some years spanning campaign. Not that they don't work, not that they can't be amazing or fun or incredible. But for a lot of people, the reality is those smaller things are going to be far more practical. And so I would love to see more official content at lower price points that are targeting that like the anthology books in mm-hmm. some ways, but like maybe it, you know, you do a $5 supplement and it's one of those.
Yeah. Or, right? Or even just like maybe a $20 supplement with like three of, you know, maybe the same level, like, you know, I think that'd be really good for, especially like a newbie DM or something who is, you know, really trying to get into it and everything, but they don't want to get one of those campaign books, you know, have, just like the, you know, the one adventure that's, you know, maybe 10, 15 pages or something like that to kind of work through. And then, okay, got that. Have everybody make new characters, see what they like and stuff. And then have another kind of small adventure, same level, so that you're not constantly being bombarded with like, okay, we're leveling up again, more stuff, more abilities, more this, more that, to, you know, kind of give a good feel of at least that level of play. Because, you know, we've talked a lot about how or where the level of play is for like a majority of D&D, and the lower level stuff is definitely the majority, just based entirely off of, you know, starting out. So many campaigns collapse and fall before they get into a higher version. So having just, you know, a bunch of different kind of starting points in one book might be a good way to, you know, kind of, again, bring more people into it, or at least have players who, you know, are really want to kind of dabble into dungeon mastering, a good source of like extra, like small adventures to kind of get their feet wet before they take on like one of the large campaign books or, you know, homebrewing a whole new setting or world or campaign or something.
Yeah. Like Curse of Strahd is amazing. Should it be the championed default campaign? Absolutely not.
Unless you're
absolutely
Jeff.
Not. That's your job. But yeah, like we need more of those small things that are 16 pages
mm-hmm.
or 24 pages, and you can prep them the day before and have everything ready to go. And that you don't have to read through multiple chapters of things to find out NPCs or motivations or plot points or, you know, all those sorts of things. Yeah. But so, yeah, just all that to say, slight tangent, more smaller stuff at lower price points, I think is a good thing and, can be, or could be a big win going forward. We're seeing this sort of renaissance in the video game space mm-hmm. right now. Or we're seeing a lot of these AA studios coming out with these incredible games at the, you know, $30, $40, $50 price point and kind of eschewing that $60, $70, $80 range. And they're seeing big success because not only are the games very good, they're also a very attractive price point. So seeing that in the tabletop RPG space, especially officially, I think would be a very good thing.
Definitely. I totally agree with you on that. And that being said too, I think, and granted, don't get me wrong, I haven't gone back and looked at a lot of the first edition, second edition stuff, but if I were to guess, I think that a lot of the, I don't know, the more current campaigns seem to probably have kind of more story and more kind of world building done for you, as opposed to the older ones that, you know, might give, you know, a character or something kind of small. Again, haven't really looked, don't know, but considering D&D was, you know, built off of wargaming, where, you know, the fights and the strategy and stuff and abilities were kind of more important than story, I think that the shift is kind of a, you know, maybe a more recent thing, you know, third, fourth, I don't know. I could just be completely talking out of my butt at this point, but to me, I really feel like a lot of what we get is so much more like character motivation, so much more, you know, story, plot hooks. This is everything that's going on potentially compared to some of the older stuff. So having smaller content with that sort of same, you know, attention to detail as well, I think is a huge move in the right direction. You know, just a smaller adventure with that sort of same, a lot of people, you know, love to RP more than just, you know, straight up just dungeon crawl and fight is a really good way to go.
Yeah, I completely agree. And speaking of other smaller side things you can do, for a first on D&D Beyond, at least, they are starting to offer paid map packs. Mm-hmm. The first is Zepeku. Hopefully I said that right. Map packs, which is a Patreon creator. But they have compiled a large chunk of those maps. And now you can buy them directly on D&D Beyond and use them in their 2D virtual tabletop. So this is kind of interesting because this is the very first of third-party map material, mm-hmm, that is for charge. Everything has so far has been basically included either for free or in the subscription tier. So it's interesting, not surprising. Honestly, it seems like this is a fairly natural extension of what they would try and do, just from a monetization standpoint. I will note that obviously, if you like these and you want to support the creator, you can just do it through Patreon. And there's, I believe we can get a link, or there's a link in the comments of that, of the first thread. But the big thing that you need to know about these is you cannot actually download the maps themselves. When you buy these are only usable in the D&D Beyond virtual map tool.
And you do so have to have a master tier subscription in order to use that.
Exactly. So that may put off some people, because remember, maps does have a way you can just upload maps. So you can also support through Patreon, get the maps potentially in more versions than are in this pack, and then just upload them to maps yourself. Yeah. So it's just kind of like a convenience thing, essentially, what they're doing with this map pack on D&D Beyond. But I did definitely want to mention that there are other ways as well. And not just for this creator, any of your favorite map creators, you can support them through their Patreons or wherever else they might be. And you can upload those as well.
Yeah. So the way that this works out is you essentially get one map, but there's different variations of that map. So like, let's say you have, I'm just going to take one of these at random. So the Dragon's Horde map, you buy that for like $6, but the map comes with essentially the same exact layout, but different environments are in there as well. So like the Dragon's Horde one has the Dragon's Horde with, you know, a bunch of gold and everything, and it's really cool looking. Or you can change it to, it's like a crystal layer. There's a moss layer. They have like lava, there's underwater. So it's basically same exact layout, same kind of geometry and everything in there, but it's filled in and differently to, you know, kind of fit with whatever you're really looking for. So it's not exactly a map pack that has a whole bunch of different types of maps. It's the same map, but with different themes to it. And I will say I did get one of them that I'm going to be using specifically for my campaign. And I am very happy with the artwork. And also, I really like all the different variations of that same map that I got. So like, definitely check it out. If you are able to find this stuff and, you know, support on Patreon, like, we obviously don't know how the financials kind of break down between D&D Beyond and Patreon. Go with whatever you feel most comfortable with and with what you want to do. But for $6 for a whole bunch of variations, I don't think it's that bad of a price.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, it's a convenience thing.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah,
for sure. For sure. And speaking of third parties, the last thing we wanted to talk about before we dive into answering listener questions is D&D Beyond is going to be getting Crooked Moon. This is the Legends of Avantress actual play series campaign setting for those of you that may listen to that actual play series. But it is specifically the biggest 5e Kickstarter ever. So it's a fairly big deal from a third party supplement. It earned more than $4 million on Kickstarter in 2023. Backers apparently received their PDFs for it in March, but pre-orders are now open for the D&D Beyond version that will be releasing June 16th. The player options and campaign setting book and monsters and adventure campaign costs 40 each or can be bought together for 70. It's a 350-page adventure taking player again. I know I just talked about small things, but if you want big things, it's 350-page adventure taking characters from levels 1 to 13. It is very much a folklore inspired horror type campaign setting. And so interestingly, may work out well with some of the new horror themed subclass reworks that potentially could come out later this year. So if you are interested in that or have heard of the setting or watched the actual play, that is going to be available on D&D Beyond soon. And it's great to see them getting more and more third party stuff. I just have to say, man, continued pushing for better organization and ways to filter things and ways to include and exclude content.
Yeah, it's a little lacking at the moment for filtering and stuff. In fact, it's funny because one of my players was leveling up and like looking at spells saying like, what about this one? What do you think? And I kept just going to just the spell list searching for it, and it just was never showing up until I actually had to filter to include partnered content, which to me is crazy because everywhere else it just shows up so that you'll buy it. So yeah, you know, make up
your mind. It needs some love.
Figure it out.
There needs to be a nice overhaul of sorting and organization and being able to filter things better and all sorts of stuff. Because the more third party content they get, and the more that you get on your specific account, the more confusing and convoluted it's going to be to set things up.
Yeah, so. Exactly.
All right, Ben. Well, with that done, let's jump into our listener question. And I really like this one a lot. This is a really good one. So Kai from the Discord says, has anyone got any good points on making fetch quests a bit more interesting? At the moment, my players need to grab the three plot point things to sort the big problem, but I'm struggling slightly to have any more interesting thing than just go to the location, go through dungeons, cave, encounter, event, grab item, then on to the next. So Ben, what do you think about this? What would you do? Because video games have had this problem for a long time.
Oh yeah.
Right. How do you make the like item is needed, go get item. How do you make that interesting?
Well, easy. First, I say I need 7 brilliant Zephyr hoofs. And then I tell them the area of the map where to go. And then the player goes and then they kill Zephyrus, but they need brilliant ones. So therefore the drop rate is really bad. So they actually have to kill 20 of them in order to get the, oh, sorry. No, that's an MMO. Never mind. Sorry.
Yeah.
Tabletop. Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Flashbacks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's the thing. Like, to be honest and completely straight to the crux of the problem is that, yeah, they need to go to a place. There needs to be either a dungeon or an encounter or some sort of event. Like, that's just how it is. That being said, if you can kind of just cover that up with set dressing and different goals and different things and things added to it, it becomes varied so that it's not that much of an issue anymore. It doesn't seem to be very repetitive. One of the things that's, you know, I want to try to do, or in, because in all honesty, my campaign right now is, hey, go find the MacGuffins so that you stop this thing from happening. So like, I'm in this same situation as well. But you know, something to do is to give them plot hooks that, you know, don't have some sort of like definite location on the different items. Add them to the world, give other scenarios, maybe have them kind of turn up into something that you are not expecting. You know, like, we have this other side quest that we're doing, but you get clues or information or something that leads to the MacGuffin or the plot point or something that you're going to, so that you're giving more than just, hey, go to this location, find a bunch of people, go over here, talk to them, go over here. And, you know, you give more context and more to do in those areas. Another thing is, you know, make it mean something instead of just, I'm just getting this thing. You know, you could have a, you know, beginning of the Raiders of the Lost Ark kind of thing where, you know, there's a dungeon, they go in, they grab the thing, they run out. Oh, I got my thing. But then all of a sudden there's a repercussion. The, you know, people whose temple that is, they're there. They want to stop you. You know, make it be the thing that they're looking for is something entirely different than what they're expecting. The fifth Harry Potter book is something. You go get a Horcrux locket or something, or no, sixth Harry Potter book, whatever, doesn't matter. And it's actually been replaced. It's a decoy. It's something, you know, something else that someone else planted. Then you have, you know, sure, another fetch quest to do, but if there's more intrigue, there's more, you know, to it. I also like the idea of like, have it be something, again, I'm just pulling another from, you know, all sorts of different things of fetch quests that I've done, have it be like in Baldur's Gate where you're hunting for something specific for a thing, turns out to be a living creature. You know, there's something more to it than just, oh, I'm not looking for a shield. I'm looking for the person who's like, their title is the shield of someplace, or, you know, something like that. Have there be some sort of huge moral quandary that goes with it. So, you know, if they go and they do take this item, it's going to completely change the surrounding area, or something's going to happen, or the marriage between these two countries is not going to happen because you're taking the wedding gift that was, you know, coming along in the dowry or something. You know, like, make all these things matter and be kind of part of the world in some form, in order to, you know, make it more interesting, or again, make the quests involve a bunch of different other things that are happening. You know, it really, I don't know. I think just makes it more interesting to just add to the concept of go over here, grab the thing. What do you think?
I really like that a lot. I think building off of what you said, just like, I think I'll use Marvel movies as an example for this, because Marvel movies are superhero movies. That's like their core. That's their DNA. Kind of like fetch quests. Fetch quests are just at their core. It is go somewhere, get thing, right? But that doesn't mean every single one of them has to be the same. And so Marvel, especially, I think, is a good example because they really branched out from their original line of here are superhero movies to here are superhero genre movies.
Yeah.
So you have You had like the tactical espionage in like Winter Soldier. Mm-hmm. You had the team up in Avengers. You had the heist movie in Ant-Man. You had the galactic globe trotting in Guardians of the Galaxy. Right. Mm-hmm. You had the political thriller in like I said, Winter Soldier, and to an extent, the new Captain America, Brave New World, movies. You had the kind of time spanning thing in the Eternals, right? So all these kung fu or martial arts movies in Shang-Chi, right? Just all these different genre type movies, but at their core, they're still superhero movies. Right. And so treat your fetch quests like that. Have the fetch quest, but then layer on a genre to it to make it more interesting. Layer on a heist, layer on a political thriller, layer on a dungeon escape or a prison escape, right? Layer on a race. Layer on a globe trotting adventure, you know, type thing. Layer on a high stakes game of chance, like just all these different things, all these different genres that you can think of. Again, we've talked about this before. Pull from media. Right.
Definitely.
Yeah. Their action movies, your horror movies, your suspense movies, your thriller movies, your comedies, your, you know, whodunits, like puzzles, just sci-fi, westerns, you know, all these different genres. Google different movie genres. Boom. There's your list of things that you can start with, that you can layer on to the base fetch quest identity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there. And I will say that in our Discord, there is actually some really good discussion about this too. So one idea in there was like, make it a race. You know, if there is this important item or artifact or something, make it so that there's another group, you know, racing to try to get the same thing. It adds, you know, tension. It adds a sense of urgency, and also you have your conflict right there if you need it. But even more so, like, make it a national treasure thing where all of a sudden, you know, you're trying to get the MacGuffin to away from other people, but at the same time, you need to use that MacGuffin to do something else. That's exactly what national treasure is. You know, you could both be breaking into a place to steal something, as opposed to just, you know, trying to go to an auction to buy it. Go to an auction to buy it, and then you're bidding against other people. Have the other people win, and then they have to figure out how to get the item from them. I mean, there's different things there. Sorry, that branched off from Make It a Race. Anyways, other things that were said, you know, just make sure to add different set dressing distractions, which is, you know, exactly what we're talking about here. Tie in backstories. If you have a way of being able to, you know, pull someone's backstory information or, you know, locate this item where, you know, it's someone's hometown or something like that, you're able to give them, you know, more of a personal connection and experience to this thing. They might even be more protective over whatever item it is that they're looking for. Lastly, from Discord, it'd say, you know, make each location have a conflict, which it is essentially, you know, it doesn't have to be a fight. There's many different forms of conflict, whether it's, you know, like you said, some sort of political intrigue, card game, you know, whatever. Just, you know, a lot of that discussion involves around, you know, just throw more into it to make it something instead of just I'm walking to the quick stop to grab a Cornetto and then coming home. So thank you very much, Marie, Solaris, and Isaac, for those points from Discord. You guys were great. And I mean, there's a lot that can be done to really kind of zhuzh up these sort of fetch quests, because realistically, that's kind of what would you say 50% of the game sometimes?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like I said, it's the same way in video games. Video games have been dealing with this problem forever. And some of them are very good about it. And those are the ones that are memorable, where the fetch quest, it's at its core, that's what it is. But it's like, I did all this cool stuff to do it. And that's what you remember. Mm-hmm. Right. Whereas otherwise, just like it just reminds me of the old South Park episode, the WoW one, where it's just like, what are you doing? I'm killing boars.
Yes. And then finally,
because the fetch quest in this case is the I am fetching XP to level up, and I'm doing it by killing boars. And yeah, at the end of the day, that's boring. That's grindy. That's not very fun.
Yep.
There's a lot of ways to make this fun and memorable for yourself and the players. Yeah. So, yeah. Thanks. Good discussion. And thank you to for the Discord people who have been contributing. It's really, really great when discussion stirs up. Get a lot of really good tips.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, like I said before, we've got a lot of good people in there, and there's some really good discussion about things. It's a great place to go for ideas.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so before we end things off, Ben, I saw that you had a fabulous community content shout out. So why don't you tell us real fast what it is?
Yeah, so there's a new up-and-comer D&D YouTube artist. Her name is Ginny D. We've talked about her once or twice before, you know, definitely. Okay. So
she's way, pretty okay.
Yeah. She's pretty okay. Much better than an up and coming artist. Yeah, she's got great videos, but she released one, recently, which was How to Become a Dungeon Master. It's a really good kind of, you know, process on, you know, if you want to become a dungeon master, here's kind of the things to look for. Here's what you need to do to kind of prep. Here's what to expect. And she goes over kind of step by step and does a fantastic job to kind of introduce the role of DMing to people who have never really done it before. And also, you know, kind of bring up some different points and side things to for people who probably have DM before. You know, I always recommend checking out her video. She is spot on a lot of things, has, you know, a great perspective on stuff, and is always very positive about things. So it's really a great place to go to, you know, kind of try out your DM ideas.
Yeah. Now, Ginny D videos are pretty much always fantastic. And I love watching them because I usually end up learning a few things as well. And especially like the intro type videos, very good if you have anyone you know that is looking to like get started. So highly recommended. That'll be in the show notes on DNDiscussions.com as well. And finally, of course, before we wrap up, we like to talk a little bit about what we are doing in our own games. For myself, my game is currently going on break for a little bit. Lots of life things, summer coming up, vacations coming up and such. So that's what we're going to be focusing on for a little bit. But Ben, I know that it just worked out based on the time we recorded that you were able to get another session in beforehand. Yeah. So why don't you tell us all about what's going on?
Yeah, well, schedules have been really tough for us too. Basically, I think it was like maybe beginning of April was the last time we were able to get together. So being able to play yesterday was great. And now we're looking at the ability to play in about 2 weeks, but then June is kind of just wiped and booked already. So I hear you about that scheduling thing. You know, real world stuff comes up all the time because, you know, being an adult and playing a game is sometimes kind of hard. But that being said, we were able to get together, which was great. Last session that we had, all that huge, long, you know, 84 years ago thing or whatever that was, they had just taken down the mob family, found out that the, you know, they're behind all these, like, you know, petrified people turning into diamond statues that were being broken down and like all that stuff. So got all that taken care of. That was done, which was a fantastic session. So this one, it was going to be kind of a, okay, well, we are in the city here. Let's kind of see what's going on. The my sorcerer and my cleric wanted to go to the library to kind of research some stuff, as well as my rogue. So the three of them went there. The paladin, who this is her hometown, her original mentor and stuff, asked to see her at the temple. So she and the bard went there and had a whole bunch of time kind of talking about, you know, what happened in the past. These are what's going on. And she revealed to her mentor that she was the chosen champion of Bahamut and showed the artifact weapon that she had and everything, and blew his mind away. He's like, oh my gosh. And, you know, they kind of decided, it's like, okay, we're going to kind of keep it on the down low because we don't know who might be out there kind of hunting, you know, trying to find you, get to you, and you know, things like that. Then the library was a lot of fun. I basically in my world, this was talked about as like the library. It's not the library of Aerlant or the library of Pelthas, the city that it's in. It's the library. If anybody ever says the library, this is the one they mean, because this is the one that has everything. So I mapped it out as best I could, which obviously I couldn't make it near as big as it is. But, you know, I did a decent representation of like, this is kind of what it would look like. But just imagine it's way bigger than that. So that was fun. But the best thing is that it's also the cleric's hometown. And as they were going to the library, like he started talking about like what it looks like and what's in it and everything, because he had no idea that I made a map of it. So as soon as I open up the map, he's like, oh my God, you did the things that I said. And I'm like, yes, I did.
Oh, love that.
Yeah.
Love that.
It was absolutely fantastic. I was very proud of myself for being like, yep, I thought the same exact thing. There's going to be like, you know, artifacts, museum pieces here. There's going to be like a lab. There's going to be all this other stuff. So able to do that. It was a lot of fun. So they went there. I made a, like this really cool room that has like a fountain and then these golden tiles that are around that acts as a calendar. So like around noon or so every day, light shines in, reflects off of like kind of the ceiling and down, and like lights up the room. It's just a beautiful visual effect with like a blue crystal shining a position on the floor that would basically indicate what day it is. And it goes around the, you know, the whole room and stuff throughout the year. Just cause I thought that'd be something really cool, and, you know, called it Corallon's Light. Because, you know, got to name something really cool like that. It's a really cool feature. So anyways, so the my sorcerer has a pendant that's her artifact or his artifact that is from it's Denir's pendant, essentially. So like the god of like scholars and stuff like that. So they are in the room that the original owner of that artifact like helped build. It's like kind of a study area. It's enchanted to be completely dry, so like there's no moisture. So in the basements of this library, where like all the oldest stuff is kept like out of the light and everything, you can take it in there. You're not going to destroy these tomes or books or anything. And there's a special light in there so that like even like torchlight won't damage the stuff. So, you know, everything's all set up like that. It's great. And then in that room is a replica of four pillars that are throughout the entire library, kind of on every level to kind of hold it up as, you know, the pillars of the library, you know, the structure, the main structure of it and everything. So as she's going through, they find that there is, there's this tablet that they're trying to find to get a ritual. And then they find that there's three challenges in order to get the tablet. And it's funny because they said specifically, oh, like in Indiana Jones. I'm like, it's exactly like that, because it's exactly where I came up with this. Pulled from media. It's what you do. But the challenges, of course, are different. So the first one was tame the elements, which they got to the first one. We'll get there in a little bit. But that's the hint that they had, which was tame the elements in the first challenge. So as they're kind of looking at everything, they see that there's a little indentation on this stone desk that's, you know, part of the room that is just the same size as the pendant that they have. So they put it in there, and then a secret door in the wall opens up in front of the desk. They go in, go down and find another scroll. And that says, in the house of Denir, look for the, I forget exactly what it was, but like, look for the pillars of knowledge, to open up the way where Corallon's light shines the brightest. So talked about the pillars, talked about the light and everything. So like, we think it's in this room or in the library. So went back into the room with the study, and there are the four pillar replicas. But now the door's open, there's a little tiny blue light on each of the different pillars in a different spot. So if you go to the corresponding spot in the library, then there's like a little indentation where you push it in, and that ends up opening up a staircase underneath the fountain in that calendar room. So then they all went down there, and this was before they, you know, one of the workers who's new there, it's like, he's kind of the intern, was just amazed and super happy and everything was going on. So he's like super excited and like ready to report back and tell everybody what's going on. And it's funny because they're like, well, you're going to kind of be infamous now because you found this, and no more secrets about you being the champion of Denir. So yay. Anyway, so they go down into this temple underground, get to the first door, open it up, and there's this big room that is kind of like, you know, old ruins. Nobody's been down there for thousands of years. Floor is kind of, you know, like musty, you know, dirty and stuff like that, except for these four pristine tiles. There's a red, white, brown, and blue one. And in the center of the room is this... It basically looks like in the new Monster Manual, the elemental cataclysm. So like, you know, a mixture of these elementals or elemental features with like dragon heads for the four different elementals and stuff. I called it something different because I'm not going to make a Titan they're a boss when they're level 16. So I'm like, yeah. So the idea again, tame the elements. So they went in, they started kind of attacking and fighting and stuff. And I telegraphed it so that when they did a whole bunch of damage to, or because they could target each of the heads separately, so each of the different elements separately. And the way I ran this was kind of weird. I basically had four different elements all in initiative order, but they only saw the one thing. So like on each of those elements turns, the head would go, or I would be able to make the body move away and do things and stuff, so that essentially I had four different enemies in there, even though there was only one on the map. And so they ended up doing a bunch of damage to the waterhead, and it kind of almost broke free, but it wasn't enough damage. So it kind of, you know, clumped back into this, you know, multi-headed elementally dragon body thing, until finally they did enough damage to one of them where that element kind of fell out of the big conglomerate and it shrunk in size a little bit. And then that's when they found out that they needed to take those elements and have them stand on the appropriate tile for it. And then it was like, a runic circle would appear around them and kind of lock them there in place, essentially taming it. So they ended up getting all of them in their different spots and everything, and door to the next chamber opened up, and that's where we ended the session. We got two Very more rooms cool. to go, or two more challenges to go. So yeah.
Puzzles. I like puzzles. Puzzles are fun.
Yeah, it was, it took me a long time to kind of think of something and kind of figure out what I wanted to do. Basically, because the problem with puzzles and challenges in D&D is that, you know, you think that it's the easiest puzzle in the world because you're the one who made it. But so many different people have so many different perspectives and things like that. So the thing that's the easiest to you might not be easy to someone else. So I thought I made it kind of clear that, you know, there's something going along with the elements. You need to do something. The tiles were there. You need to do something with them, which was good. It gave a couple different ideas of different things that could happen. So my rogue, being the smart person that she is, the first thing she tried to do was pour some water on the blue tile, you know, fifth element wise, which totally was what I almost did originally. But I'm like, it's just directly out of the movie. I want to do something kind of different with that. So with that, you know, through trial and error, they're all able to kind of work together and figure out and stuff. And I, again, super proud of my group. They're always, you know, very good, very fast, and very, you know, creative in the things that they do. So I was very happy with how that worked out. The finding the door with the pillar thing, happy how that worked out. Like it all kind of fell into place, and I felt very proud of our session last night.
That's awesome. I'm so glad you were able to get that done.
Yeah, it's I got to show you the map. I'll throw it in Discord yes. here in a minute. Yes. But yeah, it is. There's three floors of the library and then the temple underground. There's a lot of stuff there. And yeah, those other two challenges, I'm excited for them to get to them and to see if I if they're horrible or if I did okay with them too. So we'll find out.
Yeah, that's friggin' awesome. I love it. Love it. Can't wait to hear as they make their way through, for sure.
Oh, same here.
Well, thanks, Ben. Appreciate filling us in and kind of getting to play along with you as we get the recaps. Looking forward to hearing more. But that is going to wrap up the episode for tonight. Thank you so much, everyone, for coming along with us and listening and sharing feedback and your questions. As always, we absolutely love those, and we are more than happy to answer them and just kind of make them a segment on the show. If you want to be able to get us questions or have that discussion with other members of the community, Ben, why don't you tell everybody where we can be reached?
You bet. Like we said before earlier in the episode, Discord is really one of the best places to just, you know, kind of have a conversation with us. You can find a link to Discord on our website, dndiscussions.com. I will have a link in all the recent posts so that you can just join in with the fun, ask questions, talk to other people, talk to us, you know, find out the stuff that's going on. Aside from that, on our website, dndiscussions.com, you'll also find all of our Blue Sky accounts, links to those. So the show itself is going to be D&D Discussions. Ryan is TBK Zord, and I am Ben Bumhofer. On top of that, if you know, don't want to post anything on Blue Sky, if you don't feel like, you know, kind of reaching out on Discord, you want to do something more private, you can always email us. Just send those to dndiscussions@gmail.com. We love reading them. And we will either, you know, if you have a question that you want it, we can put it on as a topic on the show, talk to you there. We can answer back in the email, whatever. Just, you know, reach out. We'd like to hear from you. If you want to hear us playing, though, currently you can listen to me on +5 to Hits. We are starting a new campaign. The first episode of that should be up hopefully soon. In the meantime, I am DMing the last 4 episodes just because we had a little interlude after our Rime of the Frostmaiden campaign ended. So you got a lot of variety there. But if you're looking to jump on to listen, +5 to Hit, we are starting that new campaign soon. So check that out. Let's see, Discord, Blue Sky, email, +5. I think that's everything. Yeah. Website, dndiscussions.com. Everything's there. Aside from that, though, everybody, thank you very much for listening. It's always a pleasure having you around. And, you know, we enjoy all the support that you give us. So thank you very much for that, especially the encouragement. Anytime you like our videos. We don't do any videos. Why did I even say that? Anytime you like our episodes or posts or anything, give us, you know, reviews on all of your podcast players of choice. We'd love to hear that you guys like us. It's pretty cool. So aside from that, Ryan, thank you very much for joining me tonight. It is always a blast talking to you. And, you know, one of these days, our pre-show discussions about Star Wars might just bleed in a little bit more. Who knows? But with that being said, everybody, thank you very much for joining us and listening. Roll high and be good to each other.
Take care, and we'll see you soon.